Hello everyone and welcome to Inside Total Film, and this is our weekly podcast that tells you every new release that you need to know about. Well, it obviously did before coronavirus. So we're going to talk about streaming. And this week I've got our reviews editor, Matthew Leyland.
Hello.
And our contributing editor, James Mottram.
Hello.
Do forgive us for the quality of this particular podcast. We are recording it in different locations as everyone else is and not in a studio together, which is our usual MO. What's it like being at home, boys?
Getting to watch more films.
I've compiled a sort of list of things that I need to see that I've been meaning to get around to watching for however many years. So now I'm digging those out. My collection, and there is Possession, which is with Isabella Gianni, kind of horror film from the
early 80s.
Oh, there you go. You see, there's my first recommendation already. So that one I've never seen. I've got the first film by Bong Joon-ho, the guy obviously won for Parasite. Barking Dogs Don't Bite, I think it's called. That's one to see.
Okay, so we won't be talking about those because that's your own personal collection, James. But this week we are going to talk about Vin Diesel's new film, Bloodshot. We're looking at Disney Plus's big hitter, The Mandalorian, a mind-bending indie, Vivarium, a film called Dogs Don't Wear Pants, which isn't about dogs or pants, and a romantic Spanish film, End of the Century, plus the 80s classic Romancing the Stone. It's escapism that will take you to different galaxies, countries, and fetishes. Right, so let's get stuck in with this one. Memories are
made of this. What is this place?
I'm sorry to be the one to tell you this, but you got yourself killed. At RST,
we'd rebuild the most important assets in the U.S. military.
Soldiers like yourself. You're the first who we've successfully managed to bring back.
But improved, enhanced. With the technology in your veins, you have an army inside you that will not only make you stronger, it will heal you instantly.
Holy shit.
Now tell me, do you remember anything?
Gina. Okay, so that was Bloodshot, Vin Diesel's new film that was originally slated for theatrical release, but is now available on all platforms. And it's coming out this Friday. James, what is going on in Bloodshot? What is this about?
First of all, I should say that trailer, if you watch the whole trailer, it's extremely spoiler-filled. It gives everything away. So don't watch the trailer or the whole of it, because it gives far too much away. Basically, Vin Diesel is Ray Garrison. It's obviously based on a Valiant Comics character from the early 1990s. So when we join him, he's on a sort of mission to Mombasa. He's kind of a special ops type. That goes down, and then the next thing we see, he is being tormented by Toby Kebbell's character, Martin Axe, who wants info about this mission in Mombasa. And then he brings out Vin Diesel's character's wife, and basically, and this is not a spoiler because it's right near the beginning, he promptly kills them both, and then Vin Diesel's character wakes up in a sort of tech firm, and he's been rebuilt in a Bionic Man kind of way. Now, he's been rebuilt by Guy Pearce, who plays Dr. Emil Harting, and their company are sort of, they're rebuilding soldiers and turning them into kind of super weapons, basically. This is where it now starts to get super spoiler-filled if I start telling you more of what's actually happening. The Vin Diesel character gets kind of flashbacks. It's starting to get to his previous life, which he has no memory of. So it's kind of going on from there. But that's probably only about a quarter of the way into it. There's quite a lot more, but we start to go into spoiler territory if we tell any more.
It's not spoiler territory to discuss whether this is any good. I mean, we have talked about on this podcast before the fact that the studio didn't do any screenings of this film, so it wasn't widely available to review, which generally means that it's not very good. Is that the case?
Yeah, I think it is. It's massively derivative of a number of other films. I mean, the fact that Guy Pearce is in it, there's a huge, I mean, it's certainly not a reference to Memento, the film we did with Christopher Nolan, but a lot of the plot seems very, very similar. You could look at it and think of RoboCop or Spider-Man 2. There's a character who has octopus arms, a bit like Doc Ock. Mm. There are just so many derivative elements in this film. In the end, it's directed by a guy called David S.F. Wilson, who comes from a visual effects background. And I think you can see that. The visual effects are reasonably well done. There's a great fight in an elevator towards the end, but it's a fairly soulless experience all through.
But if you're a Vin Diesel fan, is this going to fill a hole that Fast 9 left.
He's essentially playing Dom Toretto, an indestructible Dom Toretto. He's got the vest and everything. I mean, they're kind of indistinguishable as characters. But it's quite fun seeing punching concrete blocks and being rebuilt every time he gets like the slightest scratch on him. It kind of heals instantly. So there's a bit of fun in that. But then the film just gets lost in its own plot. There's too many twists going on and it's trying to be a psychological thriller, which doesn't really work. And that kind of drags the action down. If you like Bind, you'll stick with it.
Do you think he's trying to create another franchise with this?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Which Hollywood star isn't trying to create a new franchise with virtually every film they release these days?
Very true.
I mean, I don't know about you, but my threshold level has dipped considerably being stuck at home, and films that I wouldn't ordinarily watch, I am. Is this something that's going to entertain you on Friday night if you're looking for a big sort of Hollywood mindless escapism?
Yeah, possibly, but I kind of didn't think it was mindless enough. I didn't think they were daft enough. I think it does have these kind of aspirations to be a bit more complicated and throw in a few more twists, when I wish it kind of had just stuck to Vin punching concrete for 2 hours. I would have been quite happy with that, or in flipping over trucks, you know, rather than trying to dig a bit deeper. So it sort of falls between two stools in that way, I would say.
You do get Toby Kebbell dancing to Talking Heads' track Psycho Killer in that sequence I was talking about, where he kind of offloads Vin. That's kind of an amusing sequence, but Kebbell's not in it enough to become, you know, ultimately that interesting as a character. None of the characters really are that interesting or well-formed. I think that's one of its big problems.
Do we think then that sort of this is Vin in his own little world doing a wish film for himself?
You know, in terms of Vin in sci-fi, this is it's a poor man's Pitch Black. Let's put it that way.
It's no substitute for FNF9.
Okay, so from Vin's own little world to another, let's have a look at this.
Bounty hunting is a complicated profession. Don't you agree?
So that's The Mandalorian, which is available on the shiny new Disney Plus that's now available in the UK. We're way behind the US. Is it as good as everybody says? We've got the first two episodes so far. Is it as good as they say?
Yeah, I mean, I am slightly biased, but yes, it's a huge breath of fresh air for the franchise. I mean, I think people were starting to have their doubts about where the franchise was going. Is the films were getting a bit more divisive. People were so enthusiastic about The Rise of Skywalker, but this has really kind of elevated it again. And it's made Star Wars cool again, which I think will appeal to a lot of people. It will probably bring back a lot of lapsed fans and create quite a few new ones as well.
Do you need to have seen all of the Star Wars films to get this, or can you just get straight into it and start watching?
You can get straight into it. I mean, if you have seen them all, yeah, there's lots and lots of Easter eggs, lots of references, lots of callbacks. So you'll appreciate those. But the way the story's built, it is built around this mysterious character who we've never met before. So you are kind of following him on his own journey. So if you are completely new to Star Wars, this is a really good place to start, I think.
And James, tell me, if you know nothing about Star Wars, what is this about? Where do we find the Mandalorian?
He is a bounty hunter, obviously of the same ilk as Boba Fett, you know, the most famous bounty hunter, I guess, in the Star Wars universe. And he's kind of set out on a mission early on. Werner Herzog, the great German film director, turns up. He has a sort of asset.
Are we talking about Baby Yoda here?
That is the asset that he comes across, and Well, I guess we're going to have to assume, you know, beyond those two episodes, that he forms a bond with little Baby Yoda in his floating little carry cot, which is just the cutest thing. Early on, as Matthew said, what we're seeing is it's set in a Star Wars universe we recognise, but it's completely free of the whole Skywalker plot, which I think is one of the really refreshing elements of it.
You know, and who doesn't want to watch Baby Yoda? How many episodes are there? How many times can we tune in to see Baby Yoda?
It's 8 in total.
So you can totally binge that in a night.
The episodes, they vary between, I think the shortest one's about 31 minutes. It's like 31 to 45 minutes. So yeah, it's not too much of a demand on your time.
That sounds like a thing for this weekend. I think I might do that. Mandalorian is available on Disney Plus now, and Disney Plus is also available on Sky Q, which is exciting. So we can binge to our heart's content. Okay, shall we move on? Do we fancy a holiday? Would you like a trip to Spain?
Siento como que ya te conozco desde antes.
Claro, ya nos habíamos conocido.
So that's End of the Century, which was in cinemas last month, and we reviewed it very highly in the magazine. But it's obviously, like a lot of films, catching up on its box office via streaming now. This is my tip for a delightful little foray away from the house without actually leaving the house. This is a story of two young men in Barcelona, two strangers who meet and kick off a very passionate relationship. But one of them has this nagging feeling that he's met the other one before. It's a sort of before sunrise meditation on missed opportunities, on great loves in beautiful cities, and just the connection that people can have when they're sort of in a holiday spirit. Did you see it, James? Did you like it?
I did see it. Yeah, I did quite like it. It was, like you said, it's got that kind of before sunset, before sunrise vibe. It reminded me actually of Andrew Haig's Weekend, if you remember that film, which obviously was also a kind of gay-themed story. And again, dealt with those kind of fleeting moments that people have when they come together. It was very strange watching it at home, seeing all the beautiful shots of Barcelona and quite a lot of empty streets as well, because the kind of characters are wandering around often at, you know, different times of day, and it's not that crowded, and it kind of felt like a strange thing of, God, that's what we used to do in life, wasn't it? Just wander around outside in the sunshine.
They go to a market and they buy some cheese and some ham and some lovely wine, and they take it to a beautiful park overlooking the city and sit there and eat it and chat. We might not be doing that for some time.
No, we can wistfully look at how our lives once were. No, but from a sort of serious point of view, it is an interesting romance. Again, we can't talk too much about it because there's quite a lot of different layers to it that I think would be giving too much away. But the two main performances were really good as well. They were very naturalistic. I thought it was quite an intriguing film that sort of stays with you.
You know, we've all had those situations where you wonder what would have happened if you'd taken a relationship that was just a sort of holiday romance further, where would it have led you? And there is a sort of a sliding doors element here as well, isn't there? There's a sort of a what if you had taken the potential of that relationship and gone all the way with it. I love that idea. But I also, like you say, I really love the performances, very naturalistic, realistic sex. I mean, you know, one of the complaints about Call Me By Your Name was that we sort of panned away during sex acts and sort of tastefully looked out of the window at trees. This is, you know, a little bit more honest about that and celebratory of what men do when they are feeling passionate together. And I also loved the fact that there's a scene in it with a great sort of dancing around in the lounge. They put on some music and just have a boogie, and they're just having great fun. And probably a lot of us will be doing that as well over the next few weeks. Yeah, I loved it. And also, you know, we discussed this earlier, James. It's 1 hour 24. It's short and sweet and snappy. It is like a little pick-me-up. I loved it. A little snack that you can have with a little chilled white wine. Delightful.
Before you move on to The Mandalorian.
Yes. Matthew, does that sound like something up your street?
Definitely. Well, you had me at 1 hour 24.
Okay, cool. Well, that is End of the Century, which is available to rent and to buy now on streaming platforms including Apple, Curzon and BFI Player. Okay, James, what's your next pick?
It is Dogs Don't Wear Pants.
Eksostaki. Kulti en mä pidä tavallisesti jutuista.
This is the intriguingly titled Dogs Don't Wear Pants. So, James, are there dogs in this and are they wearing pants?
There is a distinct lack of dogs. The pants do refer to the pants, the underpants that we wear, I suppose. It's a very strange film, Dogs Don't Wear Pants. It's from Finland, and just a brief breakdown of the story. Juha is a played by Pekka Strang, is a surgeon. And right at the beginning of the film, he's married and he has a young daughter. And right at the beginning of the film, his wife dies by drowning. That's pretty much a pre-credits sort of sequence. Then the film moves on several years. The daughter is now early teens and he's a single father. And he's pretty still cut up about his wife. He hasn't got over it. His life is slipping into kind of more and more, you know, disturbing territory. He takes his daughter on her birthday to a tattoo parlor And while she's getting her tattoo, he sort of wanders into this dominatrix's dungeon, which is downstairs from the tattoo parlor. And he kind of witnesses a scene and gets more and more intrigued by this woman. This woman's called Mona. And then he strikes up a kind of S&M relationship with her. And kind of as the story goes on, it's whether he finds some level of catharsis through this relationship.
I mean, the trailer, absolutely barking. but is it sort of actually sort of quite emotional and psychologically sort of intriguing?
I thought it was. It's probably less explicit, funnily enough, than End of the Century. I mean, there's not really... This is going back a couple of months when I saw it, but I don't think there's any sort of nudity in it, but there's some quite extreme moments in it. So it's not for everyone, let's say. But first of all, it treats that kind of alternative fetish world with a certain level of seriousness. It does have a sort of level of emotion and psychological depth to it. I think possibly the character of Mona isn't as well drawn as perhaps she could have been. Mm. But it is primarily focused on this surgeon who is having these problems still with the grief that he's dealing with. So yeah, I think it has a certain level of seriousness to it.
In the trailer, there's somebody peeling a fingernail off their finger. Is there sort of extreme pain too?
There are moments that you will want to look away. I can't give away the really juicy one at the end, but there's some painful moments in it. The finale is extremely uplifting in a strange kind of way. Perhaps once you get through the pain, you get to the pleasure.
Well, as somebody well-versed in S&M might say, James. so that is currently available on Curzon Home Cinema and other streaming platforms in the coming weeks. So if you fancy a look at that, go and see Curzon Home Cinema. Matthew, it's time to have a look at your pick for this week.
Welcome to Yonder, a wonderful development. It has all you'd need and all you'd want. Number nine. Number nine is not a starter home. This house is forever.
Play for a boy.
Do you have children?
No. It's not exactly what we're looking for.
That guy was so strange.
Yeah. Wait, no, I don't think this is the right way.
Yeah, this is the way we came in.
Number nine again. Did we just do some kind of loop?
How have we just...
Want me to drive?
Such a jerk.
Because I think this is not possible. We can't make turns like this over and over.
We have gone this way, Tom. Oh my God. Hello?
So that's Vivarium, which was another one that was due a theatrical release and has moved to streaming. This is a quite mind-bending, weird film, Matthew. Try to set it up for us. What's it about?
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't want to kind of welch on my responsibilities, but it is one you kind of should go into cold. But what I will say, it's about a young couple played by Jesse Eisenberg and Imogen Poots. They're going house hunting and they get taken to this new suburban development, which looks a bit sinister from the outset. It's all these kind of identikit houses. And then they're shown around this house by this quite sinister estate agent. And then they discover they can't leave. They get in their car, they drive around the streets and there's no exit. I mean, it sounds incredibly fantastical being forced to stay in a house for an indefinite period. I mean, what a wacky idea. Then there's another development, a third party enters the film as well. And it's how they deal with the repercussions of this third party that forms the backbone of the story.
So it sort of starts out Children of the Corn. You can never leave. You keep coming back. Yeah. And then it morphs into... A study of what? What would you say this is actually about?
Suburban family life, conformity, consumerism, modern life generally.
And there's also this element of how to parent, isn't there? How we do that and what we end up with. And it's got a lot going on. What did you take from it, James?
I loved it, I have to say. I think it's really a real shame that this won't come out in cinemas. I know this is just the situation now, but because it looks fantastic. Mm. I think that the job they did with the kind of generic housing estate that they kind of end up on, it's superb how they did it. It's obviously all been done in the studio, but it looks brilliant. It has that sort of idea of suburban life and conformity and what we deal with today. And yeah, I'm not quite sure how well this film will play on home entertainment at the moment, given the situation, but hopefully people will look at it as you know, as more of a bizarre fantasy than the actual reality that we're living now.
It's like an episode of Black Mirror, essentially. It's kind of like a feature-length Black Mirror or Twilight Zone. And it's very eerie, unsettling, unnerving.
And Imogen Poots is really great. This is a really good showcase for her, isn't it?
Yeah, she's kind of the emotional centre. And it seems like her and Jesse Eisenberg, they seem to be building this kind of weird box set between them, because they recently made a film called The Art of Self-Defense, mm-hmm. which is also really, really peculiar. Different filmmaking team, but they kind of teamed up for that as well. So they're really the kind of go-to kids for a strange indie these days, I'd say.
The weird duo. Let's see what else they come out with. So we'd highly recommend that one. But probably if you're in a good frame of mind, because it is a little bit bleak, isn't it?
Yeah. If you're feeling fragile, I wouldn't recommend it.
But on the other hand, it's really challenging and thought-provoking and sort of brave in the sort of directions it goes.
Absolutely, very absorbing.
Okay, great. So that is Vivarium, which is available on all streaming platforms from Friday the 27th of March.
Jane, what's your pick?
So now it's time to look at this 80s corker.
First of all, guess who else is here? You're dead right, Solo.
What?
Secondly, she's got herself a partner who likes shooting holes in everything.
Minimum price for taking a stranded woman to a telephone is $400.
$375 in traveler's checks?
Not a deal.
Okay, so that is Romancing the Stone, which obviously in these times of discomfort and stress, you want to go for something that's very comforting and feel good and reminds you of better times. And I really fancied watching Michael Douglas and Kathleen Turner as this sort of bickering couple stranded in the jungles around Cartagena, trying to find treasure before her sister is murdered by bad guys. It's so silly, but an absolute classic. And I had forgotten how much I enjoyed it, and it really did transport me. Is it one of your favourites?
I loved it at the time. I remember it being an early VHS rental. I mean, I was a huge Indiana Jones fan around that time, so I was looking for anything that was kind of in a similar vein. And while it's not quite the same, is it? But I did hugely enjoy it, and I love the chemistry between Michael Douglas and Kathleen Turner.
I definitely had it at home in the 80s. I feel like I watched it regularly. I mean, we haven't mentioned Danny DeVito. If I remember rightly, popping up in a sort of trash can or something, or a giant bin or something like that. I might have got that wrong, but that feels like what Danny DeVito does in this film. Just a brilliant piece of work. Like Matthew said, it's got that Indiana Jones feel to it, but it's probably a bit more realistic in some ways than the Indiana Jones films, which obviously move into sort of fantasy and horror slightly in some respects. This is a bit more realism based. It's just such a charming piece of work, really.
Michael Douglas and Kathleen Turner were at the peak of their sort of attractiveness and their sort of box office stardom, and just playing off each other. It's exactly what people now try to recreate in movies where, you know, the protagonists hate each other but secretly fancy the pants off each other. They do it so effortlessly, so well. There are a couple of, when you watch it now with a modern lens, a little bit dodgy sexist moments. But it's just this lovely idea as well that, you know, this woman who is this sort of very sheltered romance novelist from New York who gets even sick on the escalators in Bloomingdale's, flies to Cartagena and ends up going through the jungle with a machete and swinging across ravines on vines with this diabolical policeman in pursuit. It's such a romp. I absolutely loved it. The only bit that I really felt cringy about was, I don't know if you remember, there's a moment when they go to a party in a town and he does some dancing and breaks out some moves. And it just reminded me of Michael doing his dance moves in Basic Instinct in the disco. Oh, yeah. And it's the same feeling.
Presumably, though, that's kind of getting us prepared for, was it when they did Jewel of the Nile, they did the When the Going Gets Tough with Billy Ocean?
Yeah. And I mean, apparently, Michael Douglas has been, until quite recently, keen to do a third installment, which would be the two of them with their teenage kids, which, frankly, I would pay to see. So I'm going to say now, Michael, get that into production. I'm all for it. I want to see that.
And, you know, it's nice to look forward to films that, you know, will be coming out of the cinemas one day. Jungle Cruise with Emily Blunt and Dwayne Johnson, they very much drew from Romancing the Stone for that film. They drew from the spirit of that. So that would be nice if they managed to approximate something like that film with Jungle Cruise.
Something of that joy. It is a joy to watch. It's available on Sky Store at the moment and other streaming platforms. Are you going to break it out, have a little look?
Yeah, why not? Yeah.
But not the sequel.
No. It's only worth it for the Billy Ocean song.
And that is a great song. Great. Well, that is our picks for this week. We have time now for a reader question. So Gary Hutchins wants to know, what's the greatest movie about the music business ever made? James, what do you think?
Could we say this is Spinal Tap, which is albeit a comedy, but it does delve into the world of the music industry. And, it's a mock documentary, but if you've never seen it, it's about a fictional heavy metal band that does deal with the ins and outs of the music industry, albeit in quite a comic way. And it is an absolute work of genius.
And the classic, absolute stone cold classic. Matthew?
Well, James has stolen my answer, but I'm going to go with Purple Rain, which is very similar in some respects to Spinal Tap. But yeah, that's Prince's cinematic crowning glory. Perhaps not too many insights into the nitty gritty of business, but you do get, you get to learn about songwriting and squirting guitars and riding around on a customized bike, that kind of thing.
Okay, so I think mine would probably be, and I know it's not a popular one, but I do love it, Velvet Goldmine, Todd Haynes's fantastical adjacent story of David Bowie. I mean, he did ask for Bowie's songs and was denied, but it's a thinly disguised sort of look at a man who wants to be a star and will go through many transformations to do it, and the sort of the selling of the soul that's required for that. Hugely flamboyant, hugely theatrical, massively pretentious, but some absolutely fantastic songs that were created for the film. And I just love it. It's one of my favourites. Okay, so if you have a question, do let us know. You can send them to @TotalFilm on Twitter. And obviously, it might be difficult to get to the shops at the moment. So if you want to keep up with all of our news and our reviews, then our issues are available digitally at www.myfavouritemagazines.co.uk. And right now, there is an amazing deal on with 5 issues for a fiver. That's £5, €5, $5. That's amazing, isn't it?
That's fantastic.
And there's also 10% off Total Film subscriptions with the code INSIDETOTALFILM at checkout. So go and get it. And if you want the current one, it's currently got No Time to Die on the cover, which we'll be waiting some time for. But never mind. We can all wait and watch some amazing stuff on streaming whilst we do. All right. So it's time to say goodbye, boys. Thank you for joining me remotely and doing your social distancing.
Goodbye.
Thank you.
And we'll catch up with you on the next podcast. Cue the 80s music.